Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, into the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show, exclusively on the Buffalo Overreaction. I said that backwards. Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. It's so good to have every single one of you. My name is Joe Miller. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired, sitting along my two co-hosts, Jerry Ostrowski and John Fina, collective former Buffalo offensive linemen. Fellas, how are you doing this evening?
Rocking it. Doing great, man. A little recovery mode after an intense weekend at Raleigh-Durham, visiting Duke with Roman. It was nonstop. It was insane, but it was a blast.
You've got one kid who is now committed to Duke and then another kid visiting Duke.
That's right. That's right. Bruno's committed. And when he graduates UCLA, middle of June, he'll be heading out there. And Roman's got an offer on the table. We took the official visit and went and just checked it out, man. It was awesome.
That's pretty cool. Jerry, how's this fine day treating you, sir?
Good, man. Just rocking and rolling, enjoying the weekend, recouping from the week. And man, it's been good. Not awesome. As exciting as John, but it was good. Just watched a little college baseball.
Nice, nice. I spent all of last week in Las Vegas. My wife flew out with me and spent a couple days, which was great. It's her favorite vacation she has because my company pays for everything. Well, the company that John and I work for pays for everything, the hotel room and yada, yada, yada. We just have to we use points for her flights, and then she sits by the pool for 2 days by herself. And to her, that's magic. Just by the pool. Like, I don't bother her. There's no kids to bother her. But got back on Saturday. You guys held it down really, really well this past week. So that was really great. And we are in the middle of the offseason doldrums, right? So we've got about 5 or 6 weeks left before real football actually starts happening, before training camp happens. We've got some good stuff lined up. But before we get into this episode, please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe. Whatever platform you are consuming this show on, whether it be live on video right now with us, or if you are listening to it in audio form on some podcast platform, please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe. Also, leave us a comment. So if you're watching this in post on YouTube, we love to interact with you guys. So if you are watching it on YouTube and you leave a comment for Jerry, he'll respond. For John, he'll respond. Same thing for me. We enjoy interacting on YouTube or Facebook I guess you're not on Facebook, Jerry, but Twitter as well. X, if you want to call it that. But it's so good to have every single one of you guys. What we're talking about today, which has already brought up some controversies. I had to defend John came after John because John was like, oh, this will be fun. And I was like, well, John didn't call it the show this, because I said something to the effect of this being the weakest defensive line room for the Bills. And somebody's like, you think this is a weak defensive line, John? And I was like, John didn't say that. Joe Miller said that.
I can handle it, Joe. I can handle it.
John got attacked and not me.
Right. I was like, John did not call this a weak defensive line. I didn't even call it a weak defensive line. I said the room. And weak was probably not the best word, right?
Yeah.
Probably something the thinnest. I don't know.
You fumbled that one a little bit. I mean, you know, if you were having a conversation with the three of us, everybody out there, you know, who was listening in would know what you meant. Right. But it did come across as a little, I don't know, instigating.
But when you look at it, when we begin to break it down and have a conversation, which is what we're going to have, and I have a feeling I'm going to be up in this top left corner all by myself against the two former football players once again, which happens often on this show. I think there's something to be said for what they have done compared to what they've done in the past, which I think they're going to get to do this year, what I've wanted them to do in the past. But when you look at the overall depth, they're not as deep in this. They're not deep in any of the rooms, except maybe wide receiver this year as they have been any year in the last 4 or 5 years. But defensive line is worth a conversation. And we're going to have a little bit of conversation. And who knows, there might be meat on this bone. Brandon Bean ended up with $10 extra million yesterday on Saturday, on June 1st. So there's a chance that, as he has done the last couple of years, he's gone and gotten a depth defensive tackle or a depth like defensive player, defensive end for $1 million, $2 million. Maybe he'll pull a Lenville Joseph off the couch, right? Lenville Joseph was not exactly a garbage football player. He's a very quality starts. Puna Ford, to be honest with you, is the one that's actually not on any of our depth charts, by the way, Jerry, for 2023, who did not see significant snaps last year, which was a surprise to all of us because Puna came in from Seattle and was a heralded player. we were all surprised. Oh my gosh, the Bills signed Puna Ford. This is great. And then they didn't play him, which was interesting, but who knows why. We're not privy to those conversations. Us and Doug Whaley are not privy to those conversations. I don't know if you guys remember that quote or not, but it goes back a couple of years before Brandon Bean was here. But first blush, Jerry, you can go first. First blush. When I say year over year, 22, 23 into this year, that this room is probably not as stacked depth-wise, roster-wise. We can go through the two rosters. Just first blush, what are your thoughts?
Honestly, I don't really see that much of a difference. If you look at some of the free agent signings that the Bills made this offseason, you can look at guys like Dwayne Smoot, the defensive end from Jacksonville, seven-year vet, 23.5 career sacks, 6'3", 275. You look at Austin Johnson, defensive tackle, spent some time with the Titans, the Giants, and the Chargers. You know, he's a big 6'4", 314-pound run stopper. Deshaun Williams comes in, 6'1", 295, a five-year vet, Bengals, Broncos, Panthers, 9 career sacks. And then you look at some of the pieces that they lost. When you look at Tim Settle, Jordan Phillips, Shaq Lawson, and then Leonard Floyd, yes, I mean, maybe there was some talent outside that we lost a little bit of. But honestly, inside run stuffers, I mean, I think there's kind of trade for trade. So while there's names we know, some of these guys coming in have played some really good football. They're not that long in the tooth. They're not that old. They're not guys that are coming in 13, 14-year guys. So you're taking a guy like Phillips, who's played a long time, has had some injury issues, and you're moving him on, but yet you're bringing in guys that are kind of very like-minded as far as how they play, but are a lot younger and probably at a lot cheaper price tag. So I get what you're saying. Most defensive lines don't have 3 to 5 Pro Bowlers on it. I mean, you 100%. Got role players, you got 100%. Run stoppers, inside rush guys. So really, to me, and we'll get into it a little bit more, just looking at it, it's kind of trade for trade to me. I don't really see that much of a difference.
Yeah, John, any first thoughts?
Yeah, I think what puts people kind of in a, you know, head scratching mode is the familiarity piece of it.
Yeah, that's good.
So you see repetitive names year in and year out. You get to like the guy, or at least know the guy, or have greater expectations. And you always think, when we have somebody on our roster who's not performing up to their ability, you know, we always hold hope that this year will be their breakout year. And when it's not, and you let them go and you bring in, you know, new names, you're just unfamiliar with them. But as Jerry stated, I mean, you know, pound for pound, inch to inch, year to year, I think we might have even improved ourselves a little bit there. But the problem is, most fans, and even myself, I'm not going to go out and digest, you know, 150 plays of all of these guys, right? And I agree with you, Joe. I thought Puna Ford, I was like, okay, that's a good signing. And,
right,
you know, the guy was a ghost. He was a vapor. We never saw him. I think my opinion, and this will transition into the next topic, I'm sure, is it's not so much who they are. It's where's the productivity?
Right.
And stop with the flashes and create more consistency.
Right. And then you also have to look at, guys, the fact that you want to keep these other guys around, but yet you're also in the same breath beating the drum to make sure we re-sign Daquan Jones, right? So Daquan re-signs with a 2-year deal, $16 million, 10.5 guaranteed. You got Daquan solidified for a couple years. Mm-hmm. That was huge, right? You know, you look at the depth chart from last year, the backup to Von Miller was A.J. Epenesa. It was not Shaq Lawson. Shaq played a lot, but Shaq on the depth chart, especially the depth chart I'm looking at, Shaq was behind A.J. You re-sign A.J., 6.5 sacks last season, 2 interceptions, 5 passes defended. I mean, had a very, very productive year. He's maybe the guy that finally they say, okay, maybe you can step up and take that role of Leonard Floyd. So I think you have to look at cap considerations too, and the fact that you wanted to re-sign some of your own, you can't re-sign all of them. And then you go add a couple other, you know, a couple other pieces like we talked about in Austin Johnson, Smoot, a guy named Casey Tuhill from Washington, 6'5", 254. If he does make the roster, he had 5 sacks last year. He's a depth piece. So I think there's a lot of smart a lot of smart free agent signings this offseason, guys that have showed production in the league, and you're able to plug them in after losing some of your guys that have been around for a few years.
I 100% agree. And you've gone through pretty much both the 2023 roster and the 2024 roster as it pertains to, you know, you're bringing back effectively the first four starters and then kind of like the half starter in Von Miller and Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, and AJ Epenesa. Now we can have a conversation about those four guys and then you can slide in Von Miller just as I did in a little piece in the graphic. But it literally does come down to, as you said, Jerry, the salary cap being the issue. The Buffalo Bills were number one money-wise in the defensive line, I think the last 4 years running on the defensive line as far as the amount of money that they pushed into the defensive line. Now, they're bringing back this year those same five guys, and then the underneath guys are changing, right? And Leonard Floyd goes away with 10 sacks, which isn't a small number. I think I heard somebody say he is either the first or second 10 sack guy that Sean McDermott has had on his defense in like the last 10 years. Like, it's important. Jordan Phillips, we know what we had or have in Jordan Phillips. There's something about him being released in Miami, showing up in Buffalo, and he was a tornado in the middle of the defensive line when he first got here. Goes off to another team, right? The Bills let him go. It didn't work out. He comes back. He becomes the same Jordan Phillips. Tim Settle never really worked out as far as that goes. I think that we all love Kingsley Jonathan and what he has shown and kind of brought to this football team. He is still here. Now, all that to say this, there's a borderline and a line to walk between homerism. I know who these guys are. I root for Jordan Phillips. You know, Shaq Lawson played great. He was a first-round draft pick out of Clemson, went to the Jets, went to the Dolphins, did not play well, came back to Buffalo, and was kind of that edge setter and almost the second best edge setter that we had to probably Greg Rousseau, who I think one of the two of you have talked admirably about just Greg Rousseau and his ability to set the edge just in some of your shows. But you go through these names, right, and you jettison the homerism of I know the people I'm riding with, right, versus the new guys. And Jerry, you mentioned all of them. And when I named the show on YouTube, Forced Philosophy Changes on the Bills, 2024 defensive line, it's primarily around that salary cap issue. Jerry, you said very well, the Bills were smart in what they did so far because they don't have the money to spend. Like, they've got a lot of ballooning salaries. Obviously, they're paying $31 million for Stephon Diggs to not be here. That's, what, $15 million that could have gone to the defensive line. So the Bills' philosophy, and this is where, when I sent this text out to you guys earlier today, John was like, oh, Joe Miller, the broken record, because I've been saying this for 3 years. Like, at some point in time, the Bills have to lose this luxury that I have been fighting against. And we heard Von Miller say it when he got here. We hear players say it all the time. I do best when I'm on the field. I do best when I'm playing 80 to 80. That's what Von Miller said. When I'm playing 85% of the snaps and I've got a rhythm for the game, that's when I'm in the groove. And I have felt over the years, over the last several years that they have done this, that the defensive line was out of rhythm because they weren't on the field enough. Bruce Smith never really came off the field from my memory. Like, neither did Shane Conlon and neither did any of these guys. Well, Shane Conlon was a linebacker, but Phil Hansen, right? None of these guys came off the field. The Bills are going to be forced, and this is where I'm at least in my opinion, unless some of these new guys surprise, to play Rousseau, Oliver, Daquan Jones, AJ Epenesa, probably at about 70%, right? 75% of the snaps. And I almost, as much as I feel like the depth chart has gotten a little thin, I feel that almost bodes better for them.
Let me take this one, if you don't mind.
Do I get to take it after you, Jerry O?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You know, defensive line philosophies are not – here's the thing. Most defensive line coaches don't want their guys playing over 50 snaps a game. If you're playing full tilt and you're playing full go – a defensive lineman is not effective if he's playing 70 snaps. You've got to allow for your other guys to come off the bench to give the starters a break. Now, how does that whole thing work? Are there packages and stuff? Of course there are. But to me, for this defensive line to be as effective as they can be, especially like an Ed Oliver, who is an undersized D lineman that works on speed, quickness and twitch, right?
Right.
You can't expect those guys to play 70 snaps 65 snaps and be as effective as if they're playing 45 or 50. So to me, the rotation system is what works. And, you know, I kind of have my theory on what the key piece of the season will be as far as this group, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But that's just my theory is I don't think you want your defensive linemen playing obsessive amounts of plays because it limits their productivity. Yeah. Because if you're running into 340-pound offensive linemen over and over and over again, it's a little counterproductive to play that many plays.
So John, before you go, so yes, and I think we have to maybe in the next 10 minutes, because we've got 10 to 15 minutes left in this show, define what productivity is, because this team has never been good against the run, right? So we've got one of the reasons the Bills were so willing to bring Shaq Lawson back was because the defensive line tradition. That's why Star Latulule ended up being gone. That's why some of these guys have been gone, is because Tim Settle was supposed to be a run stuffer and he didn't amount to anything. But Chris Jahnke, the encyclopedia, the real Chris Jahnke, said before Floyd had 10 and a half sacks this past season, the most sacks a McDermott D lineman has had in the season was Jordan Phillips in 2019 with 9.5. So you've got to begin to determine what is productivity and how do you determine, oh, I'm going to get more productivity out of these guys at 50%. Then I'm at 70%, because I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that you were getting the productivity out of them that you would wanted to get. John, you can go.
So I'm going to break it down into two positions. I agree with Jerry. I agree with you in some ways. Our issue is how do you measure the productivity and why do we feel like it's been a little soft? I'll tell you, from my perspective, I would rather see the edge setters, the ends playing, pick your two starters and have them play 65 to 75% of the plays.
My man.
On the inside, though, I'm going to go with Jerry. I'm those big guys, man. Get leaning on them. There's got to be a freshness in there. Look, it's about stopping the run. And Joe, the key component you're not thinking about here is when guys get tired in the middle, the big guys get tired, they get a little bit high, and then the next thing you know, you get injuries.
Yeah,
no, you cannot have the big guys play, I think, 70% of the snaps. They've got to all be at around, you know, however you work it, at 55 to 60% of the snaps.
Yeah,
I mean, you should get it. I mean, look at Ted Washington in the third quarter, and he was, you know, we were rolling.
You're exactly who I'm talking about, because Jerry said the small guys, and I think of Kyle Williams, who played 75%.
I said all guys.
Well, I'm just saying in general, you said the smaller guys, like Ed Oliver's a smaller guy. And then I think of Ted Washington and Pat Washington, who basically shook the foundations of the stadium when they were on the field and they were out there for 70% of the snaps, 75% of the snaps. I don't know. I didn't play. So I'm not saying that I'm an expert. I'm not saying that I have the answers. I just, from what I have seen over the last 4 years, paying $55 million a year to have this wonderful full room of talented dudes playing 45 to 50, 50% of the snaps didn't seem wildly productive.
No, look, hey, I think Jerry and I are agreeing with you. Now, you can talk about scheme, you can talk about coaching, you can talk about technique, you can throw in there the personality of the guys. I mean, what happened to Tim Settle, right? Like, why wasn't he the guy that we expected him to be that he had been previously? What happens to that guy? Right. So these are all the variables that you cannot, you know, we can't sit here and understand. But my feeling is the thing that'll help our team the most is better edge play in the first two quarters.
Yeah.
And we just, Epenesa and Rousseau have got to produce. And I just don't think that in a 21-point victory or 17-point victory, having a sack in the fourth quarter just doesn't do anything for me. You know, make a game-breaking play in the first and second quarter, and we just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't think you play defense with one way. You have to have waves. You have to have waves of
people. I like it.
Up front, and you have to have multiple guys up front. So if you want to play your edge guys longer, that's fine. I want to see my guys rolling in and out. And a lot of that sometimes is predicated upon the style of offense of who you're playing against. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're playing no huddle, it's hard to get a lot of, you know, changing in and out.
Right.
But I just know watching it that the fresher the guys are on defense, the better they are. I think when you look at this defensive line this season, kind of the where the rubber meets the road with a lot of this is How does Von Miller play this year? How does Von Miller come back?
That's in my notes, Jerry.
And the thing about it is this. Here's the gamble, okay? Is allowing Leonard Floyd and his 10.5 sacks to leave, okay? He got those 10.5 sacks because he's playing a ton of plays because Von wasn't playing, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now Von comes back. Is Von able to match, surpass, or almost get to that 10.5 sack level playing the number of snaps that Leonard Floyd made, you know, that Leonard Floyd had, and then Epinesa and some of the others compliment? So that to me is where this defensive line success is going to come from. We don't have, you know, Daquan is a very good big man inside pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And we know that there are flashes, especially when Ed Oliver finds the weakness, which is when you find the non-athlete or the less athletic guy inside, if Ed can pick on him and make some plays or whatever. But most of your pressure obviously comes from outside, although I do believe that their success is predicated upon inside dudes. That's how complex this whole this conversation we're having is.
No, it gets super deep.
But honestly, again, to go back to what I stated at first was, is Von Miller going to be able this season to get close to where Leonard Floyd was?
Right.
There's where the whole thing, to me, in a nutshell, falls.
Agreed.
Well, and that's a fact, and I think that we need to find that out in the first three or four games. I mean, that has to be a known – we need to know the answer to that question, and if he doesn't play another snap the rest of the year, then we just get the other guys, you know, who are champing at the bit to get going. You know, you don't want to dedicate time to a guy that's – he should be full by now, right? And is it physical or is it mental? None of us knows, but the productivity better freaking come up the charts.
So Charles says, Floyd faded big time down the stretch. We need Von back 100%. Why did Floyd fade down the stretch? Because he played so many damn snaps at the age he was at. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
You're not necessarily wrong. And I don't want to be the guy that's kicking the leg out from under the table. And then you guys rush over, stick the leg up, and then I kick a different leg out from under the table. And then you rush.
We're not going to stick it under the table.
Well, I'm just saying. However, you talked about the fact that it gets to be a very deep conversation, Jerry. And you're not wrong. Even when you talk about the guys that the Bills, rebolstered the room with some free agents that were productive guys that, you know, that he got relatively cheap. Well, we've seen Brandon Bean do this before. Vernon Davis, Quentin Jefferson, that came in and were just not good players, not good fits for this football team, and basically did nothing but hurt this team when they were in the rotation at 45 freaking percent. To my point, which is like, maybe we're better at Ed Oliver at 65. Or Ed Oliver at 68%, then we are at Ed Oliver at 50, and then a guy like Vernon Davis at 50, which is a lot of what we've gotten over the last several years and used to frustrate the crap out of me. But regardless of that, I don't want you guys like chasing me around the room as I'm trying to bring negativity. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying
to flatter yourself, Joe. This isn't all about us hating on you. So don't kid yourself. I mean, this is,
although that is one of my favorite activities.
This is a show of the three of us. It's not John and I don't like reach out to each other 15 minutes before the show and go,
yes, you do.
Hey, how are we gonna
tear Joe apart?
We don't look, that's so please. Don't,
yes,
no. Joe, don't. Joe, you make a great point, but what Jerry was saying is the balance of it all, it's more like chaos math than it is algebra, because you have to pull in so many different variables, from injury to who you're playing, what's the defensive scheme. You know, the thing that's good, another thing that will help our interior rush this year is Matt Milano being at full speed, because he's a great a gap blitzer, like brilliant blitzer. And if we have Terrell Bernard behind him, Matt Milano at full strength, that frees up the tackles too. So it's a great big soup.
I want to talk about the Matt Milano piece, because not about Matt Milano specifically, but again, philosophy changes. So before I do, though, yes, I meant Vernon Butler, not Vernon Davis. I apologize about that.
The encyclopedia, soup, by the way. Soup is good. I like soup.
Chris Jenke, the encyclopedia that Jay Spence and I have officially named him, came through. He always comes through and corrects me on that one, which is good. So philosophy changes. So part of that philosophy change that might be forced on the Buffalo Bills this year, aside from rotation time and how long, how much percentage guys or how many snaps guys are taking, is, and we saw it a little bit last year, the willingness and the timeliness of blitzes. Sean McDermott was far more aggressive last year than Leslie Frazier was, and there was a lot more blitzing as far as that goes. Do we see an uptick in that to make up for? Like, do we see a guy like Cole Bishop, right? If Cole Bishop gets significant snaps, does he, with a big body that's quick and can get through holes, can dart through holes, do we see him? You know, you've got a guy like Dorian Williams that's much like Terrell Bernard, undersized but fast, that can dart through holes. So that's a question I would pose as well. And I do have another question about just the fatigue and stuff, but we can get to that in a minute. But that's another philosophy potential change that we see this year. Yes?
It was a welcome change as far as I was concerned. I really thought that McDermott brought really smart pressure, especially A-gap pressure last year. I thought it was effective, timely, and I think we'll see more of it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of this, though, and John will be the probably, I think he'll agree with me on this, is until I sit in a defensive line meeting, I don't really know what they're teaching them as far as how these defensive linemen are playing. Are they, you know, are they upfield guys? Are they playing gaps? Mm-hmm. What are they doing? I think they're more of a gap. It's a gap sound defensive line. They have a gap when the ball snapped. They're going to be in it no matter where it goes. And then the linebackers fill accordingly off of that. I think if you listen to some people and heard some different conversations, probably this defense is more complex for the linebackers as it is the D linemen. I think the linebackers have some, a lot of times it's, you know, the D lineman has the B gap, the linebacker has the A gap, and that's where you are. But I think this defense under McDermott and now Bobby Babbage Jr., there's some different reads and how they can attack things downhill, this linebacker crew. That's why you saw Bernard make so many big plays behind the line of scrimmage, because he had a little bit of freedoms when something, when something opened up and he was able to get downhill and make plays. But, you know, again, this defensive line, I think that we're not going to know what it does until the bullets are real and they're out there playing. But I don't think that the situation is as dire as maybe some people have made it out to be, Joe, or other people that we, you know, out there.
Are
like
you calling fans. Me out on that? Or
I said a chew. or some of the fans that are, because I think you're right, Joe. I think, and Joe, I think you're 100% correct. And I talked about this in a previous show. We get so in love, especially in Buffalo, man. It's such a, because the community is small and they get so much access to the players, unlike these huge places, they fall in love with their own and they love these guys. And when somebody's not there, all of a sudden, whoever shows up, you know, they suck. They're horrible.
They're not good enough.
Yeah. They don't meet the
familiarity test.
Right. And we haven't even talked about Dwayne Carter yet. You know, the third round pick from Duke.
Duke!
305-pound guy. A guy that maybe plays a little bit more similar to Ed Oliver than he would, say, Daquan Jones. So
right.
I think this thing will piece together fine. But again, I digress back to where I was and the fact that I think the bell cow, this whole thing, the elephant in the room, so to speak, if I could throw every analogy out there and saying, is absolutely Von Miller. And what Von Miller do?
Well, at the risk of inflating the head of the Italian Stallion on the show, 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, John Fina, you were very vocal on the Off Tackle with John Fina show several weeks in a row, to Jerry's point a couple seconds ago, about what do they have these defensive linemen, specifically the edge rushers, doing? Because it seemed like they had one move, go that direction, bull. And that's all they did. Now, we obviously have seen Eric Johnson move on, right? The defensive line coach. So what did I do, Jerry? Why are you're like losing it over there?
Go ahead. We did this. I screwed up, John. I should have had Owen. I should have had my son come on and explain some things about how their responsibility is. And just the stuff that they have to read as the ball is snapped, immense.
But John got into it. John does film study just like you do, and he wouldn't have said that on his show unless it was pertinent, I don't think.
So what I'm saying, Jerry, is you've got a variety of moves. You got your best move, and then you have your three after that. And what I just, what pains me is when you see a defensive end come up field and then kind of lazily put their hands on the tackle and start peeking into the backfield, right? Do something. And if you have upfield shoulder and you got to rush outside, then do it, but use something, use a chop, use a swipe, do something.
Right.
Don't walk into the guy. And that's my coaching point and complaint.
But again, I think you stated the fact of, okay, what down is it? Who are we playing against? Is it a guy that escapes the pocket or a guy that sits in the pocket? What was called? Like, if it's a Leslie Frazier call, I guarantee you that the wide nines probably had contained rush and had to basically get upfield 5 to 6 yards and settle to make sure no big plays were made. So it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it's hard for me to criticize because I don't know, but I understand what you are saying. I do get what you.
I feel like there's two guys that can get into a one day. Like I'm gonna go in and sit in the meeting rooms with the guys. It's probably you two. Which, by the way, Chris Yankee, the encyclopedia, corrects me again. Eric Washington, not Eric Johnson. Every time Chris is in the comment section, I start mispronouncing or like mislabeling guys or mispronouncing.
Although John, I will say that when I was playing right tackle, I wish I had went against one of those guys that just ran into me and stopped.
Exactly,
game.
And
I
that's
wish the I could point. Find one of those guys.
That's the point, right? As an offensive tackle, if a guy takes a couple of plays off and just runs into you, your life is so much easier. And when they use every time they you're like, wait a minute, I haven't seen that move before. Right. I haven't seen him come up and under like that and do a dip and rip. Well, who is he working on that? And all of a sudden, you know, he's trying to creep into my head. But if he runs into me and I got my hands on the breastplate and I'm just chilling. You know, I saw too much of that is my point.
Right.
You saw Von Miller do that. That was Von Miller 2 years ago. He did it against the Chiefs to win that football game during the regular season where he set his guy up the whole game. And then on that last interception that Mahomes threw, he did something different, got away from his guy, set him up and beat him. Go ahead, Jer.
But 2 points, and I will say this, and Ralph Wilson Jr. brought this up earlier on. I'm not going to go try Ralph to find Wilson his
senior,
chat.
Ralph Wilson Sr.
But Ralph Wilson Sr., excuse me, he brought this up earlier about the outside guys like to play more because they like to set their pass rush moves up. I do agree with that. But I also say this. I do think a lot of the best pass rushers that's ever played the game, okay, and this is true, they like to set up the pass rush. But the other thing is the greats, most of them, all great pass rushers are set up off of a wonderful bull rush.
Yeah.
And they go from there. Now, I don't know if John agrees with that. I truly agree with that.
I don't disagree with that, but I think a lot of what we saw wasn't even that.
Right.
It more of like a spy move.
Right.
When we didn't need a spy against that offense.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
We officially have the second super chat in overreaction Buffalo sports history from Scott Blakely, who I think was our super
chat. Thank
you,
Scott Blakely.
We going to Sizzler. We going to Sizzler.
What was the one from Due Date? Whatever. I won't sing the song. He just says, thanks, guys. Always look forward to intelligent football talk. We appreciate you, Scott, and we appreciate everybody in the comments section, yeah. Everybody that's joining us. One quick question for the two of you. As former offensive linemen, there's always conversation. And maybe it's the aggressive I'm attacking versus I'm defending. And that's the oddity of like the trenches in football. The offense defends, right? The offensive line defends, the defensive line attacks while they're actually on defense and on offense. But we talk about fatigue. We talk about repetitions and rotations and getting tired. Why is it offensive linemen play 70 snaps, no problem? Meanwhile,
he said no problem.
You know what I'm saying. You don't even know what I'm saying.
Hey, Jerry, remember at the end of the game, you're sitting on your stool and you're just like, I can't lift my arm.
Yes.
That might be the end.
You see it. It used to get so bad. I think I actually smoked a couple cigarettes after a few games. Yeah.
The difference, Joe. The difference, Joe, is the type of physics that you use.
Yes.
So offensive linemen can still at a very fatigued level, you know, continue to provide, you know, weight, leverage, and push. And defensive linemen are doing a lot more sudden trying to disengage type stuff. And right. It just, you know, as a game wears on, if the offensive line is doing well, it's almost insurmountable for a defensive line, because even though we're exhausted too, we have the advantage when you're running the football, for sure.
Right, right. Yeah, for sure.
Twitchy. And, twitchy. Yeah, defensive linemen are twitchy.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not the K-gun stuff, right? I mean, when you were running people over because you were conditioned, right?
But, yes and no. But, John, I don't know how you felt about the K-gun. And maybe I have a hard time thinking I was superiorly conditioned over somebody else. But even the K-gun, it was no huddle, but it was more of a – it was kind of more of, I wouldn't say a waltz, but it definitely wasn't a cha-cha, so to speak. It was
it a rumba?
Maybe.
I have a rumba that vacuums.
It wasn't.
You know, Jerry's giving you a little bullshit here. We were fit. We trained our asses off. A lot of our drives were short because they were explosive, but there were a number of drives that would go 8 to 13 plays, and we were fit. I think the importance of it was that limited amount of time between plays, we didn't have to take, 24 deep breaths to feel better. We were just ready to go.
Gotcha. I'm watching. I'm sidecar watching. I always do watch the YouTube feed at the same time that we record. And YouTube just threw two commercials in the middle of our show, and the user count or the watcher count dropped as soon as it happened. Which that doesn't sound like good practice to me. Sorry, that's my ADD going off. Like I saw the commercial come up. I was like, "What the heck? We're live!" And literally, like the watcher count dropped. I was like, "Oh, that's awesome." Anyway,
So you look at last year, just real quick, a synopsis. You look at last year's roster. We lose Floyd Phillips, Tim Settle, Boogie Basham, Puna Ford, we never knew you, and Shaq Lawson, and then we've replaced them with the likes of Dwayne Smoot, Austin Johnson, Deshaun Williams, and then of course we draft Dwayne Carter. So we have filled the role. So I'm glad you clarified your point, Joe, because when you said the whole thing of philosophy change, I was like, are we down to like 6D linemen? I haven't seen the roster.
We're going 3-4 this year. We're in the height of the drought is where we're at. So we're going to just bounce back and forth every 2 years, 4-3 to 3-4. And then we're going to bring in Wade Phillips.
And I know.
Not Wade Phillips. We're going to bring in Rex Ryan when we've got the most dominant defensive line in football. We're going to bring in Rex Ryan to put in the 3-4.
Right. And then I know Chris brought up, we did draft Javon Solomon too, but I left him out as that's still a question mark as far as
late round guy.
You know, right. What are we going to do with what is he? Is he 240?
I don't know. Chris Jahnke probably knows.
Pretty short, pretty light.
Chris Jahnke always has all the answers, but I need to figure out a way to get Chris Jahnke like an ESPN and NFL Network. Fina, like the ear plug in your ear, and then you got the guy feeding you information. I need Chris Jahnke for that.
Fina, who was the guy that we drafted when you and I played? It was when I believe it was when Wade was the I think it was when Wade was the coach. The little dude from Virginia Tech that was like led the nation in sacks for 2 or 3 years, and he was real small. And he never made it. He never made it on our roster. And I remember the guy when he showed up as just like pro. Like he looked like a tailback.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Outside linebacker.
London to make Fletcher?
No, not London.
He had defensive
line. He was tiny.
Chris Jahnke, who was it?
Who was it, Chris Jahnke?
Bill Schraff, Vautech.
It's been killing me for like weeks. I've been trying to think of this kid's name, and I can't think of it.
I can't wait till the three of us get in a room in Buffalo this summer or this fall at a bar and have everybody who's in the chat hanging out with us. And we're talking live football and go to fisticuffs. I'm bringing my, I'm bringing my knife. I'm Italian. Jerry, you bring your, bring your brass knuckles.
Potato
it's
gun.
Going down.
He's Polish. He's Polish. He's bringing a potato gun. I'm married to
I'm bringing the war bear with me. I'm bringing the war bear.
All right, Joe, shut this thing down. Thanks for watching, everybody. It's getting out of control. Gun.
I think we need a house, John. You and I need to get a house, and we'll just have like a house. We'll call it the Overreaction House, and we'll just go and
I like it.
That's where
I
we'll
like
stay. It.
This has been a wildly
you can't come though, Joe.
This has been a wildly compelling conversation. Interesting to be a part of. Fastest 40 minutes that I've been a part of in a long, very, very long time. Appreciate you guys for being here and being a part of the conversation. I appreciate everybody that's listening to us live, and will be listening to us in podcast form and later on YouTube as well. Any super quick final thoughts before I get us out of here, Jerry, John?
You got to believe in the new guys.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show. My name is Joe Miller alongside Jerry Ostrowski and John Fina. We are so glad that you've joined us. Tune in on Tuesday when we have Elena Getzberg, who is the Bills beat reporter for ESPN. She's going to be joining us for On the Beat. And then Thursday, we will be back for another episode as well. But until then, for me, for John, for Jerry, go Bills.
Go Bills.
Go Bills.